I create my own wind.
The poor little ant.
Yeah, they're not ants.
That's
just
pretty sad, isn't it? Wow, this is exciting. The big eclipse is just around the corner.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Yeah. You are. Okay, good. Well, this is a fun episode, and I want to thank you guys for all that exciting stuff. I think it's important that we keep talking about the eclipse a little bit because it's coming fast. It's coming really fast. And we now have a few watch parties. If you look on the site, you can see which one's closest to you. Mm-hmm. And whoever is too far away to go, we're going to film it. In fact, we're actually trying to figure out how we can film it live.
Oh, yeah?
So you can actually be there without being there.
Me?
Yeah, unless some Acellus graduate invents a way to send people over the internet.
Oh, then, that's what we need.
Then you could be there,
that's
right?
That's what we need, yeah.
Yeah, Matthew volunteered to be the first one to experiment. Right? That's really good. But it is really, really wonderful. Big news today, we are getting very, very close to being ready to open up the Acellus store to gold credits.
Oh, wow.
All right, those of you doing Acellus Gold and earning the credits, some of you are getting a lot of them, right?
They've been asking.
If there's anything we get asked, that's the record winner. So that's good. But the idea is, you know, this knowledge you're getting when you do outstanding in your courses has value. And this is a way for you to kind of see what that means. So when we started this, we didn't realize there were going to be so many people making so much gold. You guys are doing really well. And, you know, we let our students, our IST college students, actually make the shirts and things that we have in the store.
Mm-hmm. We do.
And there's no way they could keep up with it. So we have been out on the trail finding machines and equipment to be able to make the paraphernalia a lot faster. And in fact, I have a little video today of two new machines that we're installing and starting to use. The first machine ran for the first time today. And I guess maybe I should correct that. For the first time part of the day.
Oh, just a little bit.
Yeah. Then our favorite, Dr. Steve, did a little too much tweak and went down for a while. But it's back. It's running again. A lot to learn. But, you know, on how do you make a shirt? How do you put an image on a shirt? And me, I just use magic marker, 51 taught me that. But actually, the way that we do it is we make a screen. This is like a piece of silk that is glued to a frame, only then we fill in all the little holes in the screen where we don't want the ink to go through. We put the frame on the shirt and we get a rubber squeegee and we squeegee paint through the hole. Except if you have a lot of colors, then you've got to turn it around to another screen and another station. And we've had a machine like that. It's very labor intensive. You have students on all six of those stations squeegeeing the colors, and it's interesting. We have a new machine now that is automated. It just sips through. And I thought you'd like to see it. So here it is, for the first time, working part of the day, the screen printer.
Okay.
And there we go. So look, the shirts go on. Here is one of the screens, and we're printing yellow right now. So everywhere we want yellow, we've made holes in the shirt, in the screen at those places. And so it's pushing the ink onto the shirt. Okay, then it has to dry a little bit. And then it gets ready and it goes to the next place. And this, does this look like gray or silver?
It's like gray.
Yeah. So it's all done. We used to do this all manually. So you had to have a person on every one of these stations. Then it's going to go zipping around to the next position where it gets some nice blue. Mm-hmm. We want the apparel to be absolutely the best quality we possibly can. Look at that, blue's getting printed twice because it's such a beautiful color. And then it flips around again. Look, solar, oh, we know what this shirt is. Solar eclipse. This is a brand new shirt that just appeared in the store today. And you can see we're pushing that whiting through. It says solar eclipse. And there is the finished shirt. So what do you say? Sales Academy. And in reality, looks a little bit like that. So I don't know, can you see that pretty good? I'll put over by you. Yeah. Solar eclipse, and it says April 4th, 2024, Sales Academy. Now, we have students actually already asking about these, saying, well, if we're not going to be able to go to the watch party, can we still get the shirt? Yeah, the shirts are available in the store for anybody that wants them. The nasty question, actually the question's not so nasty, but the answer's a little bit nasty. Can we use our gold credits? Not yet. We're getting close.
It's a sad thing.
A sad thing.
Sad.
I just think it's exciting that it's coming. And
it
we'll
is
have
exciting.
It real soon. So, but everyone ought to experience the eclipse. And the eclipse will not happen during Science Live. It will happen on April 8th. And it'll be around the time of between 1 and 3 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a place where you can to an end, we'll feed it over Science Live, even though it'll be the wrong time. At least that's our goal. Now, a lot of things have to work. We have to have our wireless access point working, everything, but we're going to give it a go. Okay, so this is something to look forward to. Now, there have been a few questions. We talked a little bit about the eclipse. Tobias told us a lot more about it today, and that was excellent. I learned a lot. Some of it I'd already learned, but it was good. But some people are still trying to make sure they really understand what this eclipse is all about.
Like me.
So I get out our little model again. This is the sun. That's what 51 said. Now this is
it's
the Earth.
Blue sun.
Here's the moon, and here's the sun. And as you can see, the Earth goes around the sun, like so, and the moon. And this model doesn't work, but the moon goes around the Earth, okay? For the eclipse, we have to have a moment when the moon is right between the sun and the Earth, so we are in the shadow of the moon, and that's when we get the eclipse. Why are these so rare then? Because it seems like, you know, we ought to go around quite often. Well, it has to be that the moon is right between the Earth and the sun, which it does every 28 days, because that's how long it takes the moon to go around the Earth. But we don't get an eclipse every 28 days because the plane's off. And so there's a shadow, but it's going out in space instead of hitting the Earth. So we have to wait until things line up just perfect, and that's what makes it good. Now, another thing, remember that the orbit of the moon around the Earth is not a circle. It's more like an egg. It's an elliptical orbit, which means sometimes in its cycle, it's farther away from the Earth than it is at other times. And so if the if the eclipse happens when the moon is out on the elliptical orbit farther away from the Earth, and it gets in front of the sun, since the moon is so far away, it looks smaller, and so we have a ring of fire eclipse. The moon isn't big enough to block the whole sun. That's what happened last year.
Okay.
We had a ring of fire eclipse because the moon was a little bit too far from the Earth. This time, the moon's going to be close, which means we'll get a total eclipse. So the moon will completely block out the sun. And in this kind of eclipse, you'll actually have night in the middle of the day. And that's really amazing. Some people think it's kind of remarkable that the size of the moon is proportional to its distance from the Earth so that it just perfectly blocks the sun, which is kind of neat, but only in this special eclipse. So this is a very special eclipse. one will want to see. Now, there are other things happening in space, and you want to watch for these.
Okay.
All right, she's giving me a hard time today.
I'm just enjoying this.
Would you mind going and getting something for me?
What would you like?
I can.
You better stay.
I know.
I get nervous when you, I'd be nervous where you were going. Okay, but anyway, there's some other things. When the lights go off, because the moon is right in between the sun and us, and it suddenly gets dark in the middle of the day because we're in the shadow, mm-hmm. we're going to be able to see a whole lineup of our planets right in the middle of the day. Now, when the sun is out shining bright, we won't see them. We'll see a blue sky. But when it gets blocked and we're in the dark, we're going to be able to see all these little planets in a row. That is rare. Some of you have heard of your, what's your astronomical sign, what's your zodiac sign? That's about things like the planets and their positions. It's kind of neat. So you're going to be able to see Jupiter, and you'll be able to see all these planets light up. Venus will be very bright.
Okay.
Venus is normally the morning star or the evening star, because it's always close to the sun because its orbit, like Toby said, is right around here close.
Okay.
It is possible that we will also be able to see a comet right up there by Jupiter. When it goes dark, we'll be able to see a comet. And I say it's possible. It depends on how well the comet behaves.
Yeah.
It depends on whether it gives off a gas tail and stuff and it's bright enough we can see it. But we'll be looking for the comet, won't we? It'll be right in there. That makes this exciting.
It does.
An eclipse with a comet and all the planets lined up, it's like, ooh, exciting.
That's what I was thinking.
I think it's really, like, wow. Really exciting. Oh. But there's some other things to watch for. When the moon is covering the sun, it's like it's got a piece, a bite out of the sun, and the bite gets bigger and bigger and bigger as the moon gets more and more in the way until it gets, so it completely covers the sun. And so you see the sun disappear, 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 until there's just the teeniest little sliver left. And when that happens, expect to see a thing known as the diamond ring. The diamond ring. That's when you start to see a little bit of the halo of the sun coming around the whole thing. It looks like a ring, yet right here where it's just almost covered up, there's a teeny bit of sun still shining. It looks like a diamond. In fact, it looks something like this.
Oh.
There it is. That is the diamond ring.
I love it.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
So that's what we're expecting to see. And you can see the moon is completely blacking out all the sun, but you can kind of see the atmosphere around it. Isn't that fun? Now, as the moon continues to pass the sun, pretty soon the sun starts coming out the other side. So it disappears on the first side as the moon's blocking it. But then as it goes by, it starts to come out and be exposed on the other side. So we'll see another diamond ring on the other side as the eclipse in totality is beginning to end. You see what I'm saying? It's starting to peek out. But before we see the second diamond ring, if we're lucky, we're going to see something else. We're going to get to see the pearls, the Bailey beads, they call them. These are little beads of the sun first peeking through. And I want you to see a picture of this. Can you see those little beads there? And interestingly, the reason that they've got these little beads is because the moon is not smooth. It has craters with mountains and things. And so the sun is shining through those craters. And so whether or not you see the beads and how many will depend on where you are and how the moon's turned. And they actually have places where they think you might be able to see that. And then as it goes a little bit further, we'll see another diamond ring. And so there's a lot to watch for.
I love it.
And it's really quite exciting. Yeah, it is. It is just really, really fascinating. There's so much about the sun. I think it would be really interesting for us to talk a little bit more about the sun, because it's really, well, we depend on this beautiful ball of fire for the very lives that we're living. Mm-hmm. Without the sun, there'd be no food. Nothing would grow. And if nothing grew, nothing living would eat what grows. Yeah. And so we couldn't have life as we know it on the earth.
I like the sun.
Which is, so it's a good sun, yeah.
I always thought it was really neat that the sun doesn't choose favorites on this earth, because if it shows it likes this person or doesn't like this person, it'd be really cold for those of us it didn't like.
Yeah,
but it doesn't.
Really mess up the math of astronomy, too. Yeah.
But it doesn't choose favorites.
It is indiscriminate, and yeah, it gives its warmth and beautiful growing light to the whole world. But let's talk a little bit about the sun. In the very, very core, we have hydrogen. Mm. Hydrogen being mashed tightly together until it becomes helium. It's being transformed. And when it becomes helium, the helium with all of its electrons and components weighs a little bit less than the hydrogen that made it. And that matter that disappears in the process of helium being formed gets converted into energy. Energy being equal to the mass, the weight of the matter that's being done away with, times the speed of light squared. So it gives off an enormous amount of energy. And that's the source of power of our sun. And it powers wind, solar. It put the energy in the ground as petroleum and natural gas. It really is the source of all energy on this planet, except for atomic energy, the decay of things like uranium and that. Not.
Mm-hmm. I just had a question all of a sudden.
This is really scary.
Why do they call it natural gas? Isn't hydrogen natural gas?
Actually, for the longest time, the answer was no. Hydrogen isn't natural gas. Natural
okay.
means natural means it occurs naturally in nature.
Okay.
And hydrogen didn't. You have to make it. But now, we've started finding naturally occurring hydrogen.
Yeah.
And so it's a natural gas, too.
That's
and it's fun. I was given the wonderful privilege to be quite involved in what I think was the first discovery of natural occurring hydrogen. And that's a story we've talked a little bit about, and we'll talk more about it soon. But it's natural because it occurs naturally, and we didn't think hydrogen would occur naturally, but it does.
That's
it's kind of neat, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, so I want to get back to this sun for a minute. Besides giving off all this energy, it does some other things. How many of you have heard of sunspots? Mm-hmm. Yeah, sunspots. They're kind of interesting things. And here's a photograph of the sun showing some little spots. And what are these spots? The wrong color for measles.
Oh.
But they're kind of like little measles spots on the sun. And the sun spins. It goes around and around. Like the earth spins, we go around one full revolution in 24 hours. The sun goes around revolution, I believe, in 27 days. So these spots go around and you can see them come around. A sunspot will occur, and they're different sizes, they're different quantities, and they usually last for a week to maybe a month or two, and they slowly go away. Interestingly, they're not black. Can you see how black that sunspot looks?
Yeah.
It looks pretty black, doesn't it? But the reason it looks black is because it's next to the light of the sun that is so bright. If you cut that little sunspot out and put it up in the night sky, it would have about the brightness of the moon.
Wow.
And would be kind of orangish, yellowish in color.
Mm-hmm.
So they're only dark in comparison to the very bright sun. But sunspots are caused by a magnetic field. it turns out that there is a magnetic field that goes around the sun. And there's also a magnetic field that goes around the earth. We have a north pole and a south pole, and that creates a magnetic field. And our magnetic field is a giant shield that protects us. And one of the main things that the magnetic field of the earth protects us from is solar wind, which is all of the energy and wind coming from the sun. And as it hits our magnetic field pushes out around the earth and past us. Otherwise, we would have quite a few problems. Now, these spots are created by disturbances, I'll call them, in the magnetic field. And sometimes they'll actually spur out a great emissions. There's a thing called a solar flare. Let's look at a solar flare. Can you see the little things of material shooting out? Some of these solar flares shoot matter way out into space, and they explode out of these black holes. And it's interesting that the number of black holes that are on the sun at any one time. Yeah, here's a better shot of a flare. There it is. Can you see that thing? It can shoot out tremendous distances from the sun. And when these shoot out, they shoot out a burst of energy, of solar wind. And if it shoots out towards the earth, it can really create damage for our communication satellites. And it can even cause damage to our wiring and things on the earth. Back in the early days of communication, which is when we were using Morse code, we had a really bad solar flare, created an enormous energy wave, and it actually burned up the telegraph wires. If we were to have that kind of a solar flare now, it would really create a mess. As a result of that, or to prevent that, we've actually sent some probes out between the Earth and the sun watching for it, so that if we get a real bad solar storm, we warn people, then we can go ahead and turn off a lot of that equipment to protect it so that we don't have the destruction. A lot of neat things about the sun going on. But let's get back to the sun for a minute. So these spots on the sun go in cycles. Did you know that the North and South Pole sometimes trade places? They flip? And it happens about every hour? No.
Oh, no. Oh, that would be interesting.
Actually, it happens so rarely that since we've had modern mankind on the Earth, it's never happened. We're talking on terms of hundreds of thousands of years. Mm-hmm. But they do. They turn. On the sun, they do it more frequently. Huh. On the sun, they turn in about 11-year cycles.
Really?
So it's quite frequent. And when they change, then things happen. So there is an 11-year solar cycle. And what happens is, as they start the cycle, there are very, very few of the sunspots. And then as the cycle goes, they start to build up, and they build up, and they build up. And by the time we get to where it's about time to flip again, there's tons of them. And those solar spots mean it causes a lot of solar wind, a lot more of that kind of energy coming to the Earth, which actually charges up the ionosphere. The ionosphere is a layer way up there, mm-hmm. way, way, way up in the sky, above where our airliners fly. And it gets charged up with this solar wind coming in and does some things. That's what caused the northern lights, for example. And so when you get more solar wind, you're going to see more of that. Well, right now, we're due for another polar flip of the magnetic field of the sun. It's time.
It's time.
We expect it right away. And the solar activity is greatest right before. And we have seen more solar fireworks, if I can call them that, more of these sunspots than we've seen in decades. It's quite a really intense time. So interesting things are happening. Now, when the ionosphere gets charged up with this energy from the sun, it has an interesting property. And that is that if we broadcast high frequency radio waves up so they hit that layer, they actually bounce off and come back down to the earth. They're reflected. And they can bounce up and down, up and down, up and down, go clear around the earth. Here's a drawing that shows you. So here comes the radio waves out, and they go up and they hit the ionosphere, and then they come down. And so those radio waves can be heard in places where they shouldn't be heard, and they go clear around the earth. When I became interested in ham radio operating, and I became a ham radio operator, ham radio is a name given to these hobby guys like Dr. Murray that have radios and transmit talking to strange persons they've never met around the world. We get pretty excited during the part of the 11-year cycle when we get a lot of sunspots, because all of a sudden we can talk to places far away. Now, we talk about ham radio bands in terms of a frequency, and the frequency can be described by the wavelength of the wave. The shorter the wavelength, that means the higher the frequency. And so a popular ham radio band is 2 meters. 2 meters almost never, if ever, is reflected by the ionosphere. It's too short of a wavelength. But the 6 meter band sometimes does. As a ham radio operator, I never saw the 6 meter band come alive, but I saw the 10 meter band alive. The 10 meter, the 15, and the 20 meter, those were my bands.
What does that mean exactly?
That means that when you have a wave go up and down and you complete one full wavelength, that if you measure it, it's 20 meters long.
20.
Or it's 10 meters long, or it's 15. It depends on the frequency. If it's 2 meters long, 6 feet, that's very, very, very high frequency.
Okay.
So it's just different frequencies. And we just measure them by how long a wave is to go up and down and back to where it started. So a ham radio operator, some send Morse code, da-da-da-da-da-da, but some of us use microphones. And so we used to get on the microphone, and you didn't know who you were going to talk to, and you didn't know what the skip was going to be like. The skip was how well it skipped up and down, depending on the ionosphere. So I come home from school, and the skip worked at night. You had to wait until it kind of got dark, and then the ionosphere started reflecting. So I go turn on my receiver, and I'd listen to 10 meters, and all I could hear was static. That meant the skip wasn't working. And I'd try the 15 meter, and it would work sometimes. The 20 meter would work much more often. And when you turn on the 20 meter, it would work. And depending on the ionosphere, the skip would go to different places. So I was here in the US, and sometimes all I could hear was Japan. Everybody that was on the radio was Japan, because the skip was just right for Japan. Sometimes it was Africa, so you never knew where the skip was going to be, and that's what made it fun. So you get on there with your microphone, and you say, CQ, 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 270-00, calling CQ, CQ. And C, the letter C, and the letter Q came from Morse code. Because when they started out, they only did Morse code. So you're sending CQ, da 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 da. That meant CQ, 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 CQ. And anybody that's tuning through, if they heard CQ, they someone wants to talk to me.
So exciting.
And so you'd wait. And when they were all through sending CQ, they'd say CQ, and then they'd say from, and they'd give their call letters over. And then it'd be your chance to come back. Hi, it's me. But CQ is supposed to be like, I'm seeking you. CQ. Mm-hmm. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a trick on letters. And everybody in ham radio knew it. You know, it's fascinating because ham radio operators have this language all of their own. Like, instead of saying something like, you know, greetings, it's really nice to talk to you, they say 73.
Get it down just like that?
Yeah, and if you got someone you really like, you say 88. That's love and kisses.
Yeah. You guys all, you know, catch that?
It reminds me of a story
that
really kind of illustrates this point.
Okay.
You know, there was a bunch of guys that every night they would go hang out together and they'd play games. They're just really, really good friends. And so they just kept telling the same jokes to each other, and pretty soon everybody had heard every joke 100 times. So he says, you know what? We're wasting a lot of time telling these jokes. Why don't we just give them numbers? And that's what ham radio guys do. They just say, oh, well, instead of saying love and kisses, just say 88s, 73s. And they have a whole bunch of these numbers that we just made up with me. Well, these guys started giving numbers to all the jokes. And this new guy came in, and he didn't know what was going on. He's listening, and everybody was playing their games and things. And one guy said, 14! And the people broke out in crazy laughter. 14! 14's a funny one.
That's a good one.
14's really funny. And then someone said, 55! And that was worse. Guys rolled on the floor with laughter, and it was going on. And finally, this new guy, he says, oh, I want to get in on the action. So he said, 17. And everybody just stopped and looked at him. And he leaned over the guy. He said, what did I do wrong? And he says, well, when it comes to jokes, some people can tell them and some can't. Well, that's how ham radio operators are. But it really, really, really was fun to be able to talk to people all around the world. And when you finally get someone clear over in Africa or Australia, I talk to Australia a lot, what do you talk about? Well, ham radio operators tell you how strong your signal is, how well I can hear you. And,
the important
and
things.
And anyway, it's kind of fun. Now, to be able to send a radio wave, all you need is a wire strung outside between your house and a tree or something and a cable of coax going to it, and it would send out the signal. But if you would make a special antenna and you put elements in front of each other, like you've seen some of these TV antennas that are directional, then you take all of your power and you can point it just in one direction. And that was neat because you could hear and talk a lot further away. But if you're going to talk to Australia, you had to point it down to the southwest. If you're going to talk to some place like Canada, you had to point it north. And so they actually make these little motors, and you can turn a dial, and it'll turn your antenna to whatever direction you want to talk to. And the higher your antenna is, the better people can hear you.
Okay.
So when I started becoming a ham radio guy, I needed an antenna. And I wanted an antenna with a rotor so I could point it anywhere. And I wanted to be able to do DX. Maria will tell you what that is. It means long distance, right? I wanted to do DX, so I wanted to work on 20 meters, 15 meters, 10 meters, because those are the ones that really get way out there.
Mm-hmm.
So a very nice radio operator was quite elderly, passed away. And I went and talked to his widow, and I says, you know, you've got that old tower out there next to your house. I could sure use one like that. How much would it cost? And I ended up doing her lawn and shoveling her snow until finally I earned it.
And she said, hey,
and so I brought this tower home. And the tower was interesting because it was tall enough that you had to put wires down to the ground to keep it from tipping over. And it was a neat tower because if there wasn't any wind, I could go out there and it had a crank on it. And I could crank it and it'd go, and it'd have four sections go up really, really high. Now, I don't like to force you to look at a lot of pictures of me.
But Tina wants you to.
Yeah, but since you insist, I'd like to show you me checking out my antenna. And there I am. And if you look up on top there, you can see the rotor and then the beam antenna. And those little things on near the ends were the signal traps so it could be tuned to 10 meters, 15 meters, and 20 meters.
Goodness, look at that. What are you and doing up there?
I'm climbing that dude. And if you back up a little bit, it's just cranked up one section so I could go three more sections up.
Oh, goodness.
Which gave me a signal to go a long ways. But I don't think I was brave enough to climb it up there because it got a little swayy when it got cranked all the way up.
You're something else.
True story, when I got the antenna and I put it up by my parents' house, mm-hmm. I didn't have my license yet.
Whoops.
So I couldn't turn on the radio. I had a radio, but I couldn't turn it on until I got the license. But I just had the antenna sitting there. And my neighbors, bless their hearts, the antenna wasn't even hooked up. But they started having all of these interferences come in. One neighbor said that I was coming in on their stove. They could hear me on their stove. I haven't even turned it on.
What were you saying?
Yeah, really, what was I saying?
So it's
really fun how people are, and eventually I did get to turn it on. But ham radio was a lot of fun. And boy, the amount of knowledge that I learned by becoming a ham radio operator was very, very, very helpful to me. In order to get a license, you have to pass an exam. In order to pass the exam, you have to study and you have to learn what's a Colpitts oscillator and how do you do all these different circuits and things. And I had to memorize that with the handbook of the American Radio Relay League, which some of us have. So it's really a good thing that helps a lot of people to learn a lot of technology. And I think it's something that we ought to encourage more people to get involved back in. I think that ham radio, I think it's getting ready to make a resurgence. It kind of, with the internet and everything, you can get on the internet and talk to people all over. And some people have even set up applications so that you can do ham radio kind of stuff, CQ, and you get people. I think we want to do something like that by having a ham radio-like channel on the internet for CELA students.
Oh, how fun.
So you can just go see if anybody wants to talk and how far away. When two ham radio operators were able to have a successful communication, they would send each other a QSL card. And I had cards all over my wall of all the places I had spoken to. It was really a lot of fun. So I want to come back, though, for a minute to this upcoming exciting event. I'm going to pull out my glasses. I wonder if you'd like to try these on. Remember what we said about not looking at the sun.
Can I just hold them there?
Oh,
those. Well, I can't see anything. You know that?
Yeah. If you have sunglasses,
really can't.
It doesn't mean you can look at the sun.
Nope.
Solar viewing glasses look like you can't even see through them. They have to be, because regular sunglasses will not protect your eyes from the sun. It's got to be the kind that you can't even see through.
Yep, black.
And if you're going to look at the sun during the eclipse, order these. And almost all the United States can see at least part of the eclipse. You may not see it in totality, but you see a big bite taken out of it. Still pretty fun to watch. But get some glasses. They're selling them at drugstores, grocery stores, internet, everywhere. And but they've got to be the kind that are made for viewing the sun. If you can see through them, they're the wrong kind. But you look at the sun, and you can see the sun, and you can see it really well. So be sure no one looks at the sun. And even if you're where it goes to totality, if they still have the diamond dream and you have one bright spot there, you can't look at it without the glasses. It would be such a tragedy if anyone damaged their precious eyesight knowing this.
Yeah.
Agreed?
Agreed.
All right, so that's something really important that I want to make sure we remember. What else do you want to add about the eclipse?
I'm excited.
Yeah, it is exciting.
I'm excited.
It is an astronomical event
yep.
that we get to experience together. And one of the things that I think is really neat when we get to this thing, and if we can get where there's not clouds and we can actually see it, and we broadcast it, you'll be able to, on your phone or your computer, sign in and see live the eclipse party. But at the same time, if you buy the glasses, you can go outside and you can see the eclipse. Everybody can see the eclipse at the same time. And to me, it reminds me of how close we all are. And I hope many of you will enjoy it. This is a big deal.
It is.
It's not going to happen again like this in totality for a long time. And so I hope a lot of you have the opportunity to experience it, at least by tuning in and seeing it on the feed we're going to make. All right, well, we've run out of time, but I just want to tell you that you can get a T-shirt. You can't get them with your gold credit yet, but we're getting close to having that working. And some of you got a lot of gold saved up, mm-hmm. which is terrifying. We're going to have enough goods for you.
A lot of stuff going on.
But you should be able to do that soon. And I know you're going to say, how soon?
That's what they're asking. When is the date?
I know.
When is the exact date?
If we had more time, I would tell you, but we run through that. So we'll tell you next time. Thank you. Bye.